The recordings are started.
Thank you very much. Much of one of the CCWG Accountability Co-Chairs. Welcome to this second meeting of the Stress Test 18 subgroup. To start with, I'd like to ensure we have the roll call correctly tracked. We'll use, obviously, the AC room, but if there are any participants to this call that are who are on the audio only, please make yourself heard now.
Good afternoon. This is David Martin. I'm from Paris.
Salut, David. Any others? Okay. So, quick summary before we dive into the discussion. We had issued two documents for comments. They were received with substantial and robust exchanges of emails. And I'd like to thank everyone for being so reactive and sharing their views in details through these emails. We have tried to recap all those discussions and points of views in an updated version of each of the documents, which has been circulated a few hours ago. Obviously, the deadline was only a few hours ago, so that's short notice for review, obviously, but it's more in order to track our exchanges than to comment right now. What I found quite striking in the comments are that there are some common threads. One of them is a clear focus on and clarity that there is no and should be no attempt to dictate to the GAC the way they are making decisions. I see Brett's comment in the chat, and we can certainly share in the window the summary document at the moment. So the first item is, and I think it's good to acknowledge that there's no intent and should be no intent to dictate to the GAC the way the committee defines makes its decisions and defines its own rules of procedures. I think the discussion was useful in highlighting that the concerns on the one side and focus on the other side is really about the conditions under which the board triggers the attempt to find a mutually agreeable solution, and in how it can be, the board can be provided with clear guidelines and visibility about whether this process should be triggered or whether entering into this process is purely on a voluntary basis, which is not ruled out in any way. And so that's the outward way, the way that's, I think, Roger mentioned in an exchange, the way it's outward facing rather than looking into the way the GAC itself is organized. And there was also a number of, I found, very constructive comments regarding the proposed footnote in the Denmark proposal, and there might be some interesting way forward in investigating how that could work. Maybe even considering other places where it could be inserted, if so that it is clear that it's not a way to redefine the way the GAC itself works internally, but that it's really the way the board is provided a guideline, a clear guideline about how to whether the mutually acceptable solution attempt is mandatory or voluntary. So that's some of the items I took from this discussion. I'd like to make sure with the group whether you find this somehow reflects your reading of the comments, if there are other key views or whether there are any changes of approach that need to be shared with the group at this point before we dive into the more detailed substance of the call. Anyone wants to comment?
Monsieur?
Yes, David.
This is David Martinon. Mathieu, thank you for your summary, which is, as usual, extremely precise. I want to say just a few things. First of all, I want to remind everybody that the proposal made by Brazil was representing already a big concession, considering the position where we were on. Concession because it already accepted the idea or the notion that the consensus would be in the bylaws. The Danish proposal, and I would like to thank Julia for that, the Danish proposal represents another big concession because the footnote already defines, in fact, what is a consensus. So we're not really happy with that. We are not really satisfied with that. But for the sake of the transition, I want to say that I will bring it as a whole to the Minister of Foreign Affairs and to the Minister of Digital Affairs and see if they can accept it. But of course, this will have to be ad referendum because we're now far away from the GAC input from Dublin. The GAC input from Dublin doesn't say what the Danish proposal says. So all that will have to be reported to the GAC, and the GAC will have to state on it. Thank you.
Merci, David. I see Pedro's hand is up.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Well, I just along the same lines that David has now stated. I just wanted to reinforce the notion that we see that this what has been achieved with the GAC communique is I think it's a major achievement. It really represents a compromise solution of all GAC members with all these diverging views within the GAC. As you know, it was a result of extensive discussions in Dublin. And the day we agreed on that, I think this GAC session ended at 11 p.m. So it was really long discussion. And it is, a major compromise solution from governments with respect to stress test 18. And it needs to be considered that this is a consensus position of the GAC now. So it is agreed by all GAC members who were in Dublin and GAC members who had these different views. Brazil has then, in good faith, made an effort to translate this, GAC position into concrete bylaw amendments. We recognized then there was an effort from CCWG participants that commented on our proposal, and we see that the effort made by Denmark is an additional effort to take into account these comments. These are comments that we, as Brazil, as government of Brazil, do not agree with, but it's something that we may consider, that we, let's say, see as something, a valuable additional solution that we can, let's say, sell internally within our government. And it's something that may be accepted. So I think it's something, as David said, it's something that it goes beyond the GAC communique, and something we haven't agreed to, but is, let's say, we see as a positive sign, is maybe something that we can consider as far as we can go. So I wanted to make this also very clear and put this into this subgroup discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. I think that's those are important statements, in that they are diving right into the question I was raising before this call, whether we should narrow down the list of potential options. I think what's important also is to not prevent, I mean, keep stay as open as possible for also some of the discussions that we still need to have around this proposal from Denmark, which obviously got a lot of traction, and I want to make sure that it's clear that it is still based on Jorge's proposal, something for us to do, to look at it closely to see if it has to be fine-tuned, amended, as we discussed on the list. So we need to stay open to that, and I would encourage us to just maybe revisit this once we have had this discussion, and not close that for before we've had it. Brett, you're next.
Thank you, Matthew. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to note that the chart here of the various proposals seems to be, in my opinion, a discussion or a illustration of the status quo, which is current bylaws, the consensus reached in the first and second reports, and then two different proposals by the GAC. The discussions and the negotiations that we're having right now seem to be a negotiation between differences between various GAC participants here. I don't see here a listing of options proposed by those people in ST18 that are not members of the GAC. I'm sorry, am I still on?
You are still on, Brett, and Okay. Someone obviously got hung up, but you're still on. Please proceed.
And so I think that we need to take into account that the negotiations in the GAC are not the end of this process, that we're talking about the GAC is one part of this discussion, and then the rest of the community as another part of this discussion, and the negotiations eventually, which is not reflected here, I don't think, need to be resolving differences between a unified GAC proposal, whenever that arrives, and the positions of the rest of the community, which I think are not being given due deference here, or due consideration, rather. I put a proposal up on the list yesterday and the day before, and that is not listed here. Other people have been very strong in saying that this is objectionable in terms of giving the GAC this authority at all, notably Milton and Keith and Phil. And so I think that we need to not become fall under the impression that the negotiations between the Brazil proposal and the Denmark proposal are the only discussions that are being considered in this group. Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. Jorge?
Hello, do you hear me?
Yes, Jorge.
Hello, Jorge Cancio, Switzerland, for the record. I just want to chime in and thank David and Pedro and also Olga, as I've seen in the chat, for the flexibility. As somebody who has been working with Julia on the Common Ground proposal, I would like to stress to other colleagues in this call and in the CCWG that it is really an honest and sincere attempt to bridge the gap with other colleagues of the community. We have a GAC consensus input, which was agreed about 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, with four clear elements. Those elements are fortunately flexible to a certain degree, because we were mindful, I think, in Dublin, that we would need to have this discussion in the CCWG, because there is no discussion between the CCWG and the different chartering organizations. There are discussions within the CCWG, taking into account the inputs from the different constituencies and chartering organizations. And what we have on the table is a GAC consensus input from Dublin, which was not opposed by any member of that committee. And what we are trying to do is to come up with a solution that takes that input into account and at the same time addresses the concerns put forward by different colleagues. I think that's what we are tasked to do in the CCWG. That's how we have been working all this time in the CCWG. And I think the way forward, as it is proposed through this subgroup and with a call foreseen for next Tuesday, is the right way forward. The chartering organizations and the constituencies will have opportunity to check whether their inputs have been taken into account when they see the third draft report. So that's when they will have an opportunity to have a good look at this. And I would also like to say that in the papers you have distributed, I see that the different constructive proposals, including the constructive proposal by Brett, have been included in the papers. And I think it's very useful for us all to see that black and white and to see how we can combine them with a view to really smithing a consensus with which we all can live within the CCWG, and later on when we see the third public comment in the wider community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jorge. And I was indeed about to suggest that we move to the other document that was an attempt to collect all the inputs and suggestions received on the basis of the Denmark proposal, and I don't know if staff can put it on the screen for our consideration. While we are getting this on screen, I think a key aspect of this discussion is that we should all remember is that this group is a subgroup of the CCWG, so not at all something that would be only between GAC or non-GAC. It's we're all in the same boat here, and we are all aware that for this to be considered successful, we need consensus from all sides, and we really need to find something that everyone can live with in a very short time frame. So the unreadable document in your AC room right now is the one where we try to collect the various feedbacks, and including Brett's proposal on the thresholds of approval for the board. Brett, just to make sure you're aware that it hasn't escaped our attention or been ignored at all.
Thank you, Matthew. Sorry about that.
What I would like to us to focus on is on the various alternatives. It's been clear in the reactions to the initial email that it was important to many that the provisions on consensus not be specific to the GAC. That was part of the GAC advice in GAC input in Dublin that was made clear. So we've shifted this a little bit. But I would like to make sure we focus on what I think are the two items. One is the options, alternates on which try to define consensus, and the others are the way the alternate with between Brett's option about the way the board is approving or not is acting in a consistent manner with the GAC advice. So maybe we should try and focus on the what could be options that everyone could live with in both those areas, including, as I was saying in introduction, maybe a way to clarify that what we are doing is not about dictating to the GAC how to proceed or their operating principles, but rather defining the outward-facing aspect of it, which is how the board reacts and assesses whether it is required to trigger the mutually agreeable solution treatment. And I see a queue has been forming, so Steve, please.
It's Steve Del Bianco. Thank you, Matthew. So looking at the screen with the footnote language that that Denmark had proposed, on our prior call, this footnote really refers only to the GAC, and that is why I suggested that it not be a footnote but be part of the bylaws, but it would be in Section 2, Item 1, which reflects only to the GAC. And I think that's just a placement option. The real point I'd like to make now is that the way this is written, it's written as if it's instructions to the GAC. It has GAC consensus as a definitional item. It has words in it that, like minority or small minority, which are words that are completely undefined. And my fear is that if we are intending these words not for the GAC, but we're intending these words for the board, to tell the board, when you see advice from the GAC and it achieves X level of consensus, well, then you need 2/3 votes to reject it. And if you reject it, you've got to enter a process to try and find a mutually acceptable solution. So all of this is about instructing the board of directors. It has nothing to do with instructing the GAC. So it would be so much clearer if we pretended we're writing it for the board and not for the GAC, and we don't have to worry about careful nuance and diplomatically ambiguous terms like small minority, very small minority, and majority. We could just say what we mean. For instance, we could say to the board that only where GAC advice was supported by X percent of the GAC's member countries. And I'll bet that on this call, we could work out what that percent is. I mean, I'll just throw out an example. If the GAC feels that up to 5 countries would be a very small minority, well, 5 out of the current 150 is roughly 3%. So for sake of argument, picture a very simple line that says that for GAC advice supported by 97% of GAC member countries, the board must have 2/3 vote to reject and must enter a process to try to find a mutually acceptable solution. If you write it like that, there is no ambiguity whatsoever and no opportunity for anyone to say that we are telling the GAC what to do. Instead, we're telling our board what it must do if a GAC has achieved a certain level. And that allows the GAC to change its definition of consensus anytime it wants. The GAC can sometimes adopt on the basis of unanimity. It can sometimes adopt based on simple majority. It can do whatever it wishes. But if the GAC felt it wanted to really send a strong signal to the board, it could adopt something at 97% or higher, knowing that it earns, that advice would earn the two-thirds and the seeking of a mutually acceptable solution. So it's a different approach than trying to be very subtle and ambiguous, but trying to be explicit. Because I'm an engineer, I'm not a diplomat, I'm not an attorney, but as an engineer, I can tell you that 97% would be the clearest possible way we could solve this problem by telling the board exactly what it must do. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. So I take 2 points from your intervention. One is we need to provide the board with very clear guidelines on how to look at this definition, and you would be willing to look, one way to define this would be to define a level of a percentage of support in numbers of countries. Okay. Next is Phil.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Hello?
I can hear you, Phil.
Oh, good. Good. Just want to make sure. Yes, thank you. Introductory statement. I have no problem with the GAC defining its in its own way what a consensus is. I don't think there should be any attempt to dictate that to the GAC, and I have no problem with the notion that when the GAC gives consensus advice, the board, as it always has done, should give it very strong consideration and deference, and if it's uncomfortable with implementing the advice, should engage in good faith discussions to try to find a mutually acceptable solution. My concerns about this are twofold, and I'm really asking questions here more to understand the implications of this. The first is this concerns GAC advice on public policy matters. The way ICANN enforces anything is through contracts with contracted parties. And so on a issue of public policy, this appears to create a route for the creation of consensus policy outside the normal PDP. So I'm trying to understand if that indeed is the case, and if it is, that's a concern I have. And the second is how it would work operationally. Let's give a scenario, and this is a scenario that certainly officials in Washington may have concerns about. I don't speak for them. Fiona's on the call, and she can weigh in at any time. But let's say there's a public policy issue in which part of the small minority that opposes the GAC consensus advice includes the United States. It goes to the board, and the board is split on whether to accept the advice, and the board decides. What happens if the board simply never takes up the advice, does not vote? Does this compel the implementation of the advice at a certain point if the board fails to take a vote and reject it by two-thirds majority? So my questions are, could the advice include what is essentially the creation of consensus policy through a non-PDP route and a policy that may not be supported by a majority of the rest of the ICANN community? And what are the actual mechanics of board, when the board itself is split and it's a hot potato issue, what happens if the board simply decides not to decide? Other than that would certainly create friction between the board and the GAC for some considerable length of time, what would happen then? Again, so to conclude, no problem with the notion that the board should take the GAC advice very seriously, but strong concerns about a bylaws formulation that compels the board to take GAC advice even when a significant minority of the board has strong concerns about that advice. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. So the point you're raising on the new PDP route, I think I stand to be corrected, but I don't think it could be creating any consensus policy here just by the sake of an GAC advice without any ASO actually going through the PDP route, but that would certainly expose to an IRP for not following the bylaws. And it's just, I would say my first analysis would be that in case of non-action from the board, then stakeholders, the failure to act is also a case where the IRP can be triggered to force the board to action if it's inconsistent with the bylaws. Next is Pedro.
Now, very quickly, I was a point raised by Jorge in the chat and acknowledged by you, Matthew, but I think it would be good to raise that this, the second paragraph in this document here is not the paragraph written by Denmark, it's the paragraph written by Brazil. I think it needs to be corrected there so that we can have the precise language that Denmark has proposed. That's it. Thank you.
So I apologize for that. Could you, Pedro, or maybe Jorge, who's following, summarize what the difference is for everyone to be very clear on? That's a mistake that I should be accountable for, if I'm allowed to use this word.
I can maybe read it out loud. Maybe it's better. So.
Yes.
The paragraph that was proposed by Denmark is it's the second one in the general section. It's the following: where the board is required to seek a mutually acceptable solution to an advisory committee's advice, if the board does not follow that advice, the board is not obliged to seek such a solution if that advisory committee's advice was not supported by consensus. Advisory committees should ensure that their advice to the board is clear. In this context, each advisory committee has the right to determine its particular definition of consensus. End quote.
Thank you. Thank you, Pedro. Jorge, was that the same point? Jorge?
Hello.
Yes. Jorge, are you still with us?
Do you hear me? Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Sorry for that. It's my technical skills that are not very developed. And talking about approaches of engineers and lawyers. As a lawyer, and I think many of us and those who were working on the draft presented by Julia come from that corner, and that's an explanation for the meaning of the footnote. But translated into numbers or into percentages, probably we are very close to what Steve Del Bianco pointed out before. I don't know whether 97% or 95%. In any case, it would be a very, very high percentage probably of what we deem to be the threshold for such consensus advice. And that is really a very wide stretch from the principle or from the element we put forward with a Dublin input from the GAC. So I would really urge colleagues to appreciate that flexibility and also to do their part in bridging the differences and to acknowledge and recognize that the GAC has to have at least a potential in the bylaws to be flexible on its definition of consensus, which in any case will be around those terms of 95-97% of what Steve said. And this is, of course, only my personal capacity. I cannot speak on behalf of other GAC colleagues, but I think that, that the spirit of the footnote was really in that kind of ballpark figure, and I really urge colleagues to recognize that small degree of flexibility to the GAC. Thank you.
Thank you, Jorge. I think there's two things at this point. One is we keep referring to a footnote, but we have agreed already that footnotes will probably not be the right format, but it's the requirement that matters, and then we'll let the lawyers find the right way to put it into the text. I think what I'm hearing is some people sort of gathering around this idea of a certain level of objection that needs not to be crossed for the consensus to be recognized and for a clearer expression on that, something around 3% of objections, which someone pointed out in the chat means 5 to 6 objections in the GAC. And I'd like to test the temperature in the group, whether there's anyone who could not live with that in one of the options that we would put to consideration of the CCWG. Because remember, we are trying to find a way, find some proposals to put for consideration of the CCWG. We certainly have the prior consensus positions of the CCWG to keep in mind. But I'm sensing that we can narrow down our options towards an evolved Denmark proposal, and maybe we could go as far as calling it a stress test 18 subgroup proposal at some point. That would be something I would like to make sure we whether there's anyone here who could not live with that as our way to come back to the group with at least a concrete proposal. And I know Steve put some words in the chat.
Matthew, I put into the chat what item 2J would look like.
Yeah.
With the 97%.
So my only concern would be, I must say, I think it might be easier to assess in the sense of assessing a certain level of objection is not met rather than support. But that's probably a detail. But whether we speak about 97% of support or 3% objections, is that approach something that anyone cannot live with? And I see, I don't know if Jorge is probably an old hand here, but I assume it's Izumi, wanted to speak.
Thank you, Matthew and everyone. Hello. I have more of a question. So I think this way forward sounds reasonable to me, and it seems to keep the purpose, the spirit of Stress Test 18, and it sounds like some could be agreeable to the GAC. So I have no issue with moving forward based on this. But I recall, I've been hearing that it's very important for the U.S. government to keep Stress 18 for them to approve the proposal. So there's no point on moving forward on a direction that's not acceptable for them, because it's simply not pragmatic for us, right? So what I'd like to understand is, by stress testing 18, do they mean in the way that was drafted by the CCWG, or are they all right as long as the basic spirit is there, and And so we can actually, there's room for making changes in the direction that we're considering. So I hope it's the latter. And I'm not so familiar with the political situation in the U.S. So I wonder if anybody who has better insight than me can share their observation about this.
Thank you, Izumi, and I think we can provide some short comments on this, certainly. I just caution about not getting too far in our group into interpreting positions. Certainly agree with you, Izumi, that there's no point in working on something that's clearly unacceptable, and at the same time, sometimes when positions are not expressed by their are described and not expressed directly, then we might misleading. But maybe we can also take that offline. I see Steve and Pedro want to speak. So far, I'm noting that we may have an interesting way forward with the proposal on the percentage of objection support. Steve?
Yeah, two things. I could answer Izumi on this. I was the original author of Stress Test 18 and in March of 2014. And yes, this definitely addresses the concern that Stress Test 18 identified. The Stress Test 18 pointed out the risk that a change in decision-making methods in an advisory committee would still carry the same level of obligations by the board. And then Stress Test 18 work party left it up to the rest of us to come up with an answer that solves the stress test. So, Izumi, yes, it would answer it. And in a moment, I'll put up two options, phrasing it as percentage of support or phrasing it as no more than X percent of opposition, and I'll put that up in the chat. But I want to make it clear that this would not be a footnote referencing the GAC consensus. It would never tell the GAC what it must do. This approach only tells our board what to do and leaves aside any implication here that the GAC couldn't change its decision-making methods. So I'll pass that over to staff to display in the window, since anything I put in the chat quickly gets pushed aside as everyone else chimes in on other things. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. And indeed, actually, we are kind of merging the two discussions that were on the paper that's on the screen. The one that was on the, what was before that called, the mentioned as the footnote, and the one about the Brett Schaeffer alternate proposal with the wording that you are suggesting, Steve, which is in the chat, and which is that for advice of the GAC that's not opposed by more than, say, 3% of GAC members, board must achieve two-thirds majority to reject that advice. And if such advice were rejected, then the GAC and the ICANN board will try in good faith and in a timely and efficient manner to find a mutually acceptable solution. Izumi, you're back, please.
Sorry, that was an old hand.
Okay, no problem. Steve, is that an old hand as well?
Yes, sorry.
No problem. Pedro?
Yes, thank you. Yes, I don't have an immediate reaction to the proposal percentage that has been put. That's why I would like to see it as an option within the other options that have been put forward previously. My concern here is that we don't see in that formulation the word, let's say, consensus being proposed, nor the ability for the GAC to define what consensus is, which was in the Dublin communique. So I don't know if I misunderstood the proposal, but at least this is my perception, and I think this would, let's say, conflict with GAC communique, and this is something that we wouldn't support. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. Poetry is next. Okay. We are not hearing you right now.
Hello, do you hear me right now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, sorry. To what Pedro just said and improvising and trying to be creative a little bit, I think that perhaps the combination of the idea expressed in the former footnote and in what Steve was proposing, there could be a way of formulating it whereby the outer limits, I think that was the expression used by Paul Rosenzweig, would be defined in that wording. And perhaps it could be a combination of wording and percentages, so that on one side there is no imposition of necessarily having to go to unanimity, and on the other side there is a minimal threshold of not overruling a small minority, and we could define that that small minority in any case which represents, I don't know, 3% or 5% or 4.5%. We would need to look into the specifics of the numbers. But I think the idea expressed in the footnote of a ceiling, so to say, of not imposing the absolute ceiling necessarily, although we may stick perhaps for all the future with operating principle 47 if we work well, but not to impose it necessarily, and with a lower threshold, which couldn't be understepped of not overriding the small minority, which in any case would be, for instance, 97 or 95%. So I think it's just the word, I think. Thank you.
So if I understand you correctly, okay, it's you, what you're mentioning is sort of adding the wording about the need for consensus to this particular provision that we now see on our screen to sort of have, I'm not really sure on the expression in English, but belt and hangers on the definition of consensus. Am I correct? That would be the way you would answer Pedro's answer.
I suppose yes. It's I'm also not a native English speaker, so it's a bit difficult to express myself. But I think that the idea of the former footnote of establishing a top and down or a hat or a ceiling and a lower threshold, if we could combine that with expressing that the lower threshold, which defines what is no longer consensus, would be 97% or 96% or 95%, that would do the trick. And at the same time, we would preserve the flexibility the GAC called for, and also what Pedro was saying. Have I expressed my picture a bit better?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that would also probably diminish the impression that the GAC ways of working would be based on voting, I expect. But that certainly needs to be seen in writing. We are at this point in the call. I think that's an interesting way to investigate how an option could be built, that apparently could get concerns from various sides to a common ground. I'd like to just check that if whether there are any people on the call who think that it's not even worth wasting our time on this, or they would really not be able to live with that. We went to a broader consensus commitment, but with a provision that this consensus commitment can be assessed by thresholds that the board, because it's really about how the board takes the input, could rely on in case of in case the consensus is not full consensus. And I see Brett's hand is up.
Mathieu, I would like to pick the floor after Brett, please.
Yes. Brett.
Thank you. Thank you, Mathieu. I think that everybody is ignoring the fact that the GAC has within its authority to send advice to the board that is not consensus advice. In fact, it, Operating Principle 47 currently states that in the event that the GAC advice is not supported by consensus, that it can send a series of options to the board representing the positions of the GAC. The idea that you would increase the threshold when the GAC cannot get unanimous or at least without objection support for the advice is, I think, objectionable on its face. You're putting the board in a very high level of two-thirds of the board rejecting a GAC advice to choose between differing positions, some of which may be very strongly held in the GAC. You talk about a minority of countries. Those countries can be very influential countries. They can be non-influential countries. But I think when you're talking about sovereign nations, you have to respect the sovereignty of those countries. If you're going to establish a two-thirds threshold for rejection of GAC advice, I think it is very important that the GAC advice be supported without objection. Otherwise, I think that GAC advice that is not supported by the entire membership can be sent to the board and should be rejected by a majority of the board, which is the current rules in place. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, David?
Thank you, Mathieu. I would like to commend all the speakers who are trying to find a solution. I would just like to emphasize strongly the fact that if you are willing to get into a discussion about percentages, number of states who would oppose or who would not oppose a consensus, and I think you're looking for another 2 months of debates inside the CCWG and the GAC. Yes, it's not a wording proposed by an engineer. It's probably more of a diplomat who did that, because we're trying to find a common ground on interests that are extremely complicated, and I don't think it's worth reopening the question. But if you were to do it, then you have to bear in mind that it's not an easy discussion, that you will have to discuss what is a GAC member, who is in the room, who is not in the room, who is participating remotely, and I am sure that will take a long time to define those rules. This is exactly why the GAC wants to remain in control of its own internal decision-making system, making rules. So, again, I don't think it's a very good idea to get into a discussion about percentages. Why 97%, by the way? Is it just an idea, or is it an example, or is why? What is the rationale behind 97%? 97% of what, exactly? Again, I'm not sure I get into that. So, good luck, but I'm not sure I can defer to my authorities on a proposal that would be then extremely vague, because it would remain to be cleared and on a serious number of topics.
Thank you, David. Thomas, you wanted to get in the queue. Thomas?
Yes, this is Thomas. Thank you very much, Mathieu. I'm in a very noisy environment, so I hope that the sound quality is still okay. You know, having listened to this conversation, to the conversation we had during the last call, I think there's a lot of goodwill to come to a compromise and find compromise language. However, we hear interventions now and then that either the status quo should be maintained or that we should take an entirely different approach. I think this is the time for us to really do, as we did previously, the would you die in the ditch for it test. I think that the requirements that we further refined during this call are very good ones, so I would like to encourage all of us to really give that a chance and see whether we can settle on such compromise. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. I think that this, as we move to the close of this call, I think there's still bridge, still gaps to bridge, definitely. But we are finding new and interesting grounds. To me, in terms of options, it is interesting that certainly the Denmark proposal is showing traction and is definitely has been making a very important contribution to moving the discussion forward. Today we've also, I think, made clear that we could certainly remove some of the options that we had in our documents if we take into account the fact that we don't want to direct the GAC on the way it works, but we want to focus on the criteria for the board to assess whether they are required to get into the mutually acceptable solution attempt. I think there would be it would be interesting if we could try and investigate this option and see whether it can accommodate the concerns that were raised by Brett, also by David, and I've seen some support also in the chat for that, to avoid getting into a long discussion about numbers and potential consequences. So what I would offer as a way forward is that we keep the Denmark proposal as one of the options at this point, but also try and investigate this new option. We will try to circulate it shortly in order to get amendments, and probably we will have to organize a final call of this subgroup before the end of this week if we want to be able to come back to the CCWD with clear suggestions and a way forward. It must be clear that we have, due to the fact that we have a second report proposal, it is a fallback scenario. However, I think it would be detrimental to the whole process if we were not able to come back to the CCWG with something, a very strong proposal that shows that we that everyone has been moving further in this discussion, and I think the number of concessions has been quite significant here. The next steps that I would suggest would be, number one, we sort of circulate some form of, I would say, the stress test 18 subgroup option for your comments to investigate the wording options to make sure we can assess whether we can live with this and try to reconvene on Friday for a meeting probably around the same time of the day in order to finalize that and clarify how we are going to report back to the CCWG. If there's no objection to that way forward, and reminding everyone that we need to really find a way Bernie is telling me in the chat, I think we'll try to make it a 90-minute call next time to make sure we can really close. 1 hour might be a little short because a number of us are involved in participating, which is good news. We'll try and issue by 23:59 UTC as usual a new wording and hope that you can keep your minds as open as they were during this call to try and find a mutually agreeable solution, to take words that are familiar with us now. And with that, I'd like to thank everyone for your contributions today. I think it's not easy, but it's still we're moving forward. I once again really appreciate the constructive spirit that everyone's demonstrating on this call. I'm sure that's going to be very helpful in finding a way forward. Thank you again, and talk to you soon then.